Now to the battle to keep making steel in South Australia. During this campaign, politicians have worn a path to the Whyalla Steelworks of the Arrium Company. It was placed into administration earlier this year and it does threaten local jobs. Opposition leader Bill Shorten has pledged $100 million, along with another $50 million that's been promised by the South Australian government that would help a new buyer upgrade the plant and make it viable. The Coalition has offered a $50 million investment. But as taxpayers' funds get loaded into the sale process, it raises again pressing questions about manufacturing in Australia. How do we best ride out this tempest that is globalisation? And that's certainly been on display this past few days in the Brexit referendum. How do we do that and be clever about making steel products in this country? Well, two men of steel join us now, and what they don't know about steel isn't worth knowing, I think I can say. Professor Peter Hodgson started his career in the research labs of BHP. He's now Deputy Vice Chancellor of Research at Deakin University. Peter, welcome.
Thank you very much. Yes, great to be here.
And Geoff Brooks is Professor of Engineering at Swinburne University. Good morning, Geoff.
Yes, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Now, Arrium's collapse and the potential loss of jobs coinciding with the election today has focused the minds of our leaders. Geoff, is the likely injection of taxpayer funds a good thing?
I think it is if it's money is well invested. So I wouldn't personally be enthusiastic about just putting money to help save the steelworks, because in its current form, I don't believe it's got a long-term future. But if it's invested in the right sort of technology that places the steelworks into a place where it can make higher value products, then I think it could be money well invested, because I think it'll be able to return wealth to the country and put jobs into the region. So yes, if it's well invested, I support it.
Peter, how crucial is it that the South Australian and federal governments have offered to save jobs? I think Premier Jay Weatherill says it's keeping our sovereign steel-making capacity.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very interesting debate to have, I have to say. I think that globally, all countries want to maintain a strong steel industry for all sorts of reasons, whether it be to for their defence going forward or risks from imports and, I guess, you say our sovereignty. But at the same time, we have to get a balance, as Geoff said. I think we need to actually look at where we're going in the future rather than just saying, well, you know, this is a short-term fix. I think we have to have a long-term vision for the steel industry in Australia.
But we're talking here about keeping also job capacity, that is, skilled people in this area. I mean, without these large-scale investments, surely without big plants like Arrium's in Whyalla, we actually lose the skills that we may need in the future.
We do. And I guess it's interesting to rewind the debate back to, say, 2 years ago with the automotive sector, where I guess we made a decision to walk away from that sector. So we have to, I think, really clearly understand what is advanced manufacturing in Australia, what is the future, and so hence, where do we want to see government funds go?
Geoff, I don't want to dissect what went wrong at Arrium, but in principle, should Arrium have been, well, better prepared for these downtimes in steel?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a valid criticism. And I have a lot of friends and associates at Arrium, so, you know, it's not a, I don't say that casually, you know, because it's a hard industry to succeed in. Mm. I think basically Australia has a very large rail network. It has a very significant infrastructure in rail. And the main product that, you know, is saleable at Whyalla is rail steel. And I think that we should be thinking about, well, how do we make sure that plant is at the front edge of rail technology? How do we make sure it's selling not just in Australia, but all through Southeast Asia? And how do we make sure we're at that front edge of those kind of products? And if we have that kind of thinking, which is what Peter's suggesting, you know, for the whole industry, but I'm just picking on Whyalla at the moment, then that will help us understand what we're going to invest in and how we're going to make sure that we are not revisiting this problem 3 or 4 years from now. That, in other words, we've got an industry that's thriving. Yeah. And I think that's the kind of debate we need to have, and that needs to inform the kind of investment that we're talking about going into this plan.
Yeah, the reference to steel for rail is, I think, very apposite. I mean, we've got the inland proposed freight rail line down the east coast of New South Wales. We've got urban rail projects, commuter rail projects in New South, in Sydney, I think in Melbourne, I think in Perth. And if we finally get our act together and do something clever like build the fast rail between Brisbane and Melbourne, I would have thought this will keep steel into this country going for, what, 20, 30 years?
Well, I think it has to look beyond that. I think we need to look at the tremendous potential through Indonesia and Malaysia. We could turn this problem on its head instead of saying, gee, let's worry about surviving. What about thriving? What about thinking about becoming a technology leader? And I think that's where I would like to see some of the debate go. And that takes away from, like, you know, just this saving jobs in the short term to doing something exciting. And when you set something, a goal like that, you also attract clever people. Because at the moment, just saying about the industry to survive, I don't think that's going to attract clever people. But if you think about making a really successful industry, you will attract people. And I know Peter does a lot of work in trying to develop new steel grades and exciting new ideas that, you know, exactly along those lines. And so, you know, I think that's where it needs to head.
Yeah. Peter, this situation raises all the problems that people associate with globalisation, especially, as I said, in the context of Brexit. So it's interesting to note that in the UK, I think Tata Steel is being sold off, but there's a widespread agreement there to sort of save our steel through state intervention. I wonder, Peter, if protectionism is in fact the short-term solution to this market distortion.
No, I actually agree with Jeff. I think that we need to have a focus. I think rail is a really good example where we say that we want to be a market leader in the region. And I think under those sort of circumstances, then there is a real value in government investment in terms of going that next step. I think that steel globally sort of hits at the heartstrings of most governments, because I think it's sort of been, you know, from World War II or whatever, it's been seen as one of these industries you have to have. But I think that it's changing. I think that, you know, the demographics in the region are really important. You know, if you ignore China and India and that whole region between us and those two markets, you know, there is really a lack of rail steel products and also structural steel products. And I think that we have an opportunity to play in that space.
Yeah. It's Saturday Extra. Andrew West in for Geraldine Doogue. Jeff Brooks and Peter Hodgson are my guests. They're experts in the steel and engineering sectors. And given that South Australia is much of our election focus today, and has been, you know, and steel jobs are there, seem to be on the line, we're taking a look at that and also a look forward. Peter, you talk there about, and you both talk, you and Jeff, about our potential to sell into Asia. There's also a question of, can Australia provide better quality steel products? Because I guess as a railway nerd, I follow what happens with the rail systems around the world. China did have, with its fast rail project, some very severe safety problems. Could locally made steel exported to China guarantee a safer product?
I think that's unlikely. I mean, you're right. The speed limits in Chinese rails have been reduced by about 10 or 15% in the last few years because of safety concerns. But the answer is that they have a lot of capacity there and a lot of investment in R&D. I think that where we need to do more work is, I mean, I think one of the interesting areas, as Jeff said, is the whole mining sector, where the rails there are quite different to other rails, not passenger rails. And I think that we need to actually position ourselves to be a technology and research and development leader in a sort of a few areas. We can't compete with the mass products. I mean, China is just over, it's got about 200 million dollars, sorry, 200 million tonnes of excess capacity there. And so we can't compete on a sort of a, you know, the commodity area. We have to compete at the high end.
Yeah. Jeff, you frequently visit other steelmaking countries. What are the trends and the skills that you think we need to be alert for?
Well, I think a couple of role models are obvious. The first one is Korea. And when you go to Korea, you see the government and the big companies there, Hyundai, POSCO and other ones, investing heavily in R&D. So it's a great pleasure to go to POSTECH, which is a very high-ranked university that was originally set up by POSCO. And there you can see a focus on trying to get the next level of steel products and to make sure that Korea's at the front end of steelmaking. And it really works. I noticed, I'm sure Peter read those articles that came out in Nature last year where POSTEC have developed a light steel alloy with a lot of aluminium in it and trying to use clever technology, precipitation technology, to be able to make really high-strength, high-formable steels. I know an area that Peter's got passion for. Mm-hmm. And they're pushing that and they're trying to get that into the plant. So it's not just, you know, clever, you know, professors. You know, it's linking to an industry. And I also see similar things like that in Scandinavian countries, particularly Sweden, where they're sort of at the front end of stainless steel technologies and new alloys. And once again, it's got a focus. And exactly the way that Peter was describing, we can't be experts at all these different grades of steel because it's such a huge industry. But we can pick a few things to be really clever at and then push hard at those things. And that will provide a long-term future. So I think there are role models there. And I think there are lessons we can learn. And I know that I have spoken to several industry ministers in the government about, you know, visit Korea, visit Sweden, visit these countries and see how people are doing it, because it can be done. Yeah. It is doable.
Peter, on lightweight steel, which is a particular area of research for you, what is so special about this and where are the sort of applications at their most revolutionary?
Yeah, so I think that the drive for improved fuel economy across the world is just changing the whole focus of the industry. There are a lot of legislative sort of reasons in the next 5 years that the car makers have to achieve quite radical improvements in fuel economy. And up till now, most of it's been achieved by improving the engines. We're at this sort of limit of engine technology without going to sort of, you know, hybrids or electric engines. And so the next generation of cars really need to get lightweight. And so what we've been looking at now is if you do advanced steels, as Jeff said, with either lighter steels or higher strength steels or a combination of the two, which is what we're trying to pursue, you can get about a 20% weight reduction. And that's quite significant. And so that's what the whole global industry is moving towards. Mm. And so a lot of our research in Australia is about that. I mean, it's sort of strange in some ways we don't have an automotive industry, but the research in Australia is being seen as world-leading across, you know, China, India, Europe, etc. And so we are often being approached to do research on a global scale. Mm. You know, we talk about exports of, wheat and coal and minerals, etc. But we shouldn't downplay the export of also R&D and technology as well.
Yeah. And Jeff, these lighter steels, that's good for the environment too, especially if you're talking about lighter cars, more fuel-efficient cars.
Yeah, that's right. That's a big bonus. And, of course, steel has this wonderful thing, of course, of being highly recyclable. Mm. So if you can make steels that are light but also easily recyclable, you've got a very nice situation in terms of the environment. I think there's also things we can do on the environment side on the front end as well. So there's things that we can do to reduce the whole environmental impact of making steel. And I think actually South Australia is a good place for that because they have ample solar resources and also ample wind resources. So I can imagine a whole lot of technologies that could be developed to reduce the environmental impact of steelmaking. And once again, turn this problem on its head. Think to ourselves, why don't we be the leaders in that? You know, why don't we take the leadership, not just in the product development that we've been talking about, but in trying to be the cleverest people at making the steel? Mm. And so I think there's opportunities there. And I think it's about saying, let's be clever in these few things and let's stick at it and let's create a sustainable future for the industry. I think it's quite doable.
Yeah, look, unfair question, only 30 seconds each. The future for the two steelmaking plants, because we haven't mentioned BlueScope Steel in Wollongong, optimistic or do we just have to ride things out?
From my perspective, I think that both steel plants probably need to partner with an international player. I think that it is a hard time. I mean, I've been in the US recently and the talk there was about how, again, China is killing the US steel economy, which is much bigger than ours. So it is hard times globally, but I think that we do need a local steel industry. It is core to our infrastructure, to our defence, etc. But what we do need, as Jeff just said, is to focus on what we're really good at and really try and push that forward.
Jeff?
I think in the short term, I think BlueScope will survive, and I'm hopeful that it will then try to bring in some new products and prosper. So I feel reasonably optimistic about BlueScope. I think with Arium, I'm worried. I think that they will need to find some external investors and companies that are willing to put money into the and see the potential, and that's going to be tricky in the current environment. So I am worried, but I think if the governments and good people in South Australia back it, I think it can be turned around and it can have a positive future.
Well, it won't be for lack of attention. A lot of attention on Arium and Whyalla in this election. Thank you very much to both of you. I really appreciate it. Jeff Brooks, Professor of Engineering at Swinburne University, and Peter Hodgson, Deputy Vice-Chancellor of Research at Deakin University. Thanks for being with us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
Thank you.